Today is Thursday, January 15th, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. Stop the Ice, Reign of Terror in Minnesota by Patrick Martin. In the week following the January 7th murder of Renee Nicole Good by an agent of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, Minneapolis has been placed under occupation by thousands of federal paramilitary forces operating under the direction of the President. The situation was starkly outlined in an extraordinary address on statewide television Wednesday night by Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Walz condemned what he called a campaign of organized brutality against the people of Minnesota by our own federal government. The Democratic governor and 2024 vice presidential nominee gave the following account of conditions in the state. Quote, "News reports simply don't do justice to the level of chaos and disruption and trauma the federal government is raining down upon our communities. 2,000 to 3,000 armed agents of the federal government have been deployed to Minnesota. Armed, masked, undertrained ICE agents are going door to door, ordering people to point out where their neighbors of color live. They're pulling over people indiscriminately, including US citizens, and demanding to see their papers. And at grocery stores, at bus stops, even at schools, they are breaking windows, dragging pregnant women down the street, just plain grabbing Minnesotans and shoving them into unmarked vans, kidnapping innocent people with no warning and no due process." Unquote. Walz noted the resignation of a half dozen career prosecutors at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Minneapolis because the Department of Justice designated Jonathan Ross, the ICE agent who killed Renee Good, as the victim, and proposed to investigate Becca Good, Renee's wife, for alleged ties to anti-government groups. And he cited Trump's declaration on social media that for Minnesota, the day of retribution and reckoning is coming. Walz called this a direct threat against the people of the state, who dared to vote against him 3 times and who continue to stand up for freedom. What Walz is outlining is the emergence of a presidential dictatorship, and not just in Minnesota. Trump has already said that there is no constraint on his ordering US military operations overseas, but his own dubious morality. He clearly has no use for the US Constitution either. The flooding of Minnesota with federal officers could well be followed by invoking the Insurrection Act and deploying the National Guard and regular military forces in cities throughout the country. Far from pulling back after the murder of Renee Good, the Trump administration has drastically intensified its violent rampage. The scale of the assault is staggering. To nearly 3,000 federal officers are double the manpower of the Minneapolis and St. Paul police departments combined. One ICE atrocity has followed another. On Wednesday night, a federal officer shot a man in the leg during a confrontation in which DHS claims the individual attempted to flee arrest and later struck an officer with a shovel or broom handle. A local pastor was detained and threatened at gunpoint by ICE, only to be released with the comment, "You are white and you wouldn't be any fun anyway." In Richfield, Minnesota, 2 target workers, both US citizens, were slammed to the pavement, detained in an unmarked SUV, and later released facing federal charges of assaulting an officer. An immigrant from Honduras, Mauricio Enriquez Serrano, was dragged from his car unconscious as bystanders screamed in horror. He is now reportedly imprisoned in a Texas detention center. On Tuesday, just 2 blocks from where Good was killed, armed and masked ICE agents smashed through a disabled woman's car window, sliced her seatbelt, and dragged her from the vehicle, ignoring her screams that she was autistic and trying to go to the doctor. There are several reports of ICE agents citing the murder of Good as a threat when confronting protests. "Have you not learned from the past couple of days?" one agent told a resident who was filming him. And it is not just Minnesota. On January 9th, in Santa Ana, California, 21-year-old Carden Rumler was blinded and nearly killed by a less lethal round fired by a DHS officer, an assault that left Rumler hospitalized with shrapnel still in his body. There is a glaring contradiction in Walz's address. He describes a state of occupation by paramilitary forces sent by the Trump administration. But his proposed remedy is that the people of Minnesota avoid provoking Trump in their protests and wait for accountability, which he claimed would come at the voting booth and in court. First of all, the ICE violence that took the life of Renee Nicole Good was not provoked by her or anyone else protesting in defense of immigrants. It was intended and deliberately encouraged by Trump and his fascist cabal. Their response to the murder of Good was to denounce her as a domestic terrorist and paid agitator, while Vice President J.D. Vance claimed that ICE agents had absolute immunity. Trump's top fascist aide, Stephen Miller, sent a message to all ICE officers that no one, no city official, no state official, no illegal alien, no leftist agitator or domestic insurrectionist can prevent you from fulfilling your legal obligations and duties. As for lawsuits, a regime that is operating out of complete lawlessness will not recognize the courts, and it has no intention of losing elections. Trump has already begun hinting that elections should not even be held in 2026, and if they take place, they may well be held at gunpoint with military occupation of selected cities. The force that can and must be brought to bear against Trump's drive to dictatorship is the working class. It produces all of society's wealth and holds the potential to shut down the machinery of repression and exploitation. The only serious and effective response to Trump's attack on Minnesota is the organization of a general strike by the entire working class, both in Minnesota and nationwide. The organized industrial action of the working class can paralyze the operations of ICE, the Department of Homeland Security, and all the repressive agencies that Trump is deploying against immigrant workers, and sooner rather than later, against the working class as a whole. Airline workers can block the transportation of federal agents into Twin Cities. Logistics workers can cut off their supply chains. Hotel workers can deny them lodging, as one suburban hotel did last week, setting off a right-wing panic. There is a growing hostility among working people and the American population as a whole to the violent thuggery of ICE and the Trump administration. Recent polls show a sharp shift, with more Americans favoring the abolition of ICE than opposing it, and a clear majority supporting the prosecution of ICE agent Jonathan Ross for the killing of Renee Good. Workers in Minnesota itself have a history of political struggle against state repression and violence. It was in Minnesota that truck drivers, under the leadership of the Trotskyist movement, carried out a successful general strike in 1934 that defeated the combined repressive forces of the local police and the Citizens Alliance, the mouthpiece for big business in the Twin Cities. The events of the past week mark a new stage in the Trump administration's conspiracy to establish a presidential dictatorship. Over the past year, as this conspiracy has unfolded step by step, the Democratic Party has done absolutely nothing to stop it. As a party of Wall Street and the military intelligence apparatus, it is far more terrified of the emergence of a mass movement of the working class than it is of a dictatorship. Such a movement would not stop with Trump, but threaten the entire capitalist system. The Socialist Equality Party calls for the formation of rank-and-file committees in every workplace, school, and neighborhood. These committees, independent of the corporatist trade union apparatus, must become centres of resistance to the Trump dictatorship. These committees must rally workers across all industries, healthcare, education, transit, logistics, manufacturing, and beyond, into a unified counteroffensive against the Trump administration and the capitalist oligarchy it serves. They must demand the arrest and prosecution of Renee Nicole Good's killers, the immediate withdrawal of ICE, CBP, and DHS forces from Minneapolis and every other city, the abolition of these paramilitary agencies, and the release of all detainees. The fight to stop dictatorship must be linked to the fight against the capitalist system itself. The massive fortunes accumulated by the ruling class must be expropriated, the major corporations and banks transformed into public utilities under the democratic control of the working class, and social resources redirected to meet human need, not private profit. The SCP advances this program as the basis for the political mobilization of the working class to put an end to fascism through the fight for socialism. New York strike pits nurses against the financial oligarchy. By Eric Schreiber and Bill Van Orken. On Thursday, some 15,000 nurses at three private non-profit hospitals in New York City are entering the fourth day of their strike, the largest nurses' strike in New York history. Their fight for safe staffing, healthcare benefits, raises that beat inflation, and protection against workplace violence assumes immense importance amid the bipartisan attacks on public health and workers' rights. The nurses' struggle pits them against the entire capitalist oligarchy that subordinates healthcare to the accumulation of profit. The hospitals have issued bellicose threats and declared the nurses' demands extreme and reckless. Mount Sinai claimed that satisfying the nurses' demands would cost it $1.6 billion over 3 years. This is a fraction of the wealth of the financial oligarchy centred in Wall Street, and many members of Mount Sinai's own board of trustees could write a check for that amount. The New York State Nurses Association, the NYSNA, bureaucracy, has focused its statements on the seven and even eight-figure pay packages awarded to the hospital CEOs. While these salaries are indeed obscene, of even greater significance are the multi-billion dollar fortunes amassed by the members of the boards of trustees at the hospitals that are now on strike. The membership lists for these boards read like a who's who of America's ruling financial oligarchy. These individuals enjoy the most intimate connections with every section of the US capitalist ruling class, as well as with the administration of President Donald Trump and the two major big business parties, the Democrats and Republicans. The Mount Sinai Board of Trustees includes some of the wealthiest and most politically connected figures in the United States. Among them is James S. Tisch, CEO of Lowe's Corporation, whose family fortune is estimated at over $10 billion. Tisch is a major Republican donor, and his daughter Jessica Tisch was recently reappointed as New York City Police Commissioner by Democratic Socialists of America, DSA Mayor Zoran Mamdani. Other trustees include Frank Bisignano, a Wall Street billionaire, whom Trump named Social Security Commissioner, after his wife donated over $931,000 to Trump's 2024 campaign. Yet Glenn Dubin, a billionaire hedge fund manager implicated in the Jeffrey Epstein scandal, John Hess, CEO of the oil and gas multinational that bears his name and a major advocate of fracking, Henry Kravis, the multi-billionaire co-founder of private equity giant KKR, and a $1 million contributor to Trump's 2017 inauguration. Robert Rubin, former Treasury Secretary and executive at Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, and Andrew M. Saul, a Republican investment banker appointed Commissioner of Social Security during Trump's first term. No less notable is the New York Presbyterian Board of Trustees, which includes Jerry Speyer, the billionaire real estate mogul who controls Rockefeller Center, Stephen R. Schwartz, president and CEO of the Hearst Media Conglomerate, Ray Dalio, the multi-billionaire founder of the world's largest hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates, and William Lauder, chair of Estee Lauder Companies, a member of a family worth an estimated $40 billion and a major Trump donor. Also on New York Presbyterian's Board of Trustees is Stephen A. Schwartzman, the CEO and co-founder of Blackstone, the world's largest private asset manager. Blackstone manages over $1 trillion in assets, and Schwartzman's personal wealth is estimated at over $50 billion. He ranks among the top donors to Trump and the Republican Party. The reaction of these billionaires to the nurses on the picket line mirrors the Trump administration's response to mass demonstrations against its anti-immigrant crackdown and other dictatorial measures. They are extremists who must be crushed to set an example for other sections of the working class. The ruling class speaks through both of its political parties. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has framed the strike as a threat to patient care, warned that it could jeopardize the lives of thousands, and declared a state of emergency across New York City that strengthens the hand of the hospitals by allowing them to bypass licensing rules and import out-of-state staff. Nor should nurses place any trust in the rhetoric of Mayor Zoran Mamdani, who has sought to portray himself as an ally of the strike. Mamdani said nothing about the looming confrontation in the days leading up to the walkout. When he finally appeared for a photo op on the picket lines, it was after months of cultivating ties with the city's financial elite and pledging a partnership with the Trump administration. A fight against the oligarchy requires the full mobilization of the power of the working class. The New York State Nurses Association, the NYSNA, bureaucracy, however, is implacably opposed to such a struggle. Prior to the strike, the NYSNA worked systematically to isolate nurses, cancelling walkouts at one hospital after another without even finalised agreements. It is attempting to repeat its betrayal of 2023, when the union similarly kept nurses divided and blocked the development of a unified struggle. The so-called safe staffing victories hailed by NYSNA 2 years ago proved to be empty rhetoric. The rest of the trade union apparatus is doing nothing. On January 8th, 45 unions representing over 2.5 million workers issued a letter calling for contracts to be settled before the January 12th strike deadline. Unions are ready to stand shoulder to shoulder with nurses on the picket lines if a strike becomes necessary, the letter stated. This is an empty promise issued after most strikes had already been called off. To take forward the struggle, the WSWS urges nurses to build rank-and-file strike committees, democratically elected and led by nurses themselves. To establish democratic control over the strike, nurses should formulate their non-negotiable demands as the precondition for accepting any contract or ending the strike, including genuinely enforceable safe staffing ratio levels determined by rank-and-file nurses themselves, the immediate reinstatement of the three Mount Sinai nurses who were falsely accused of sabotage and an end to all victimizations, immediate restoration of health benefits, regardless of contract status, health coverage at no cost to healthcare workers, coupled with inflation-busting wage increases. These committees must fight to expand the strike to all 15 affected hospitals, oversee all negotiations and picketing, and mobilize active resistance to any attempt to prematurely shut down the strike or send nurses back to work on the basis of empty promises. At the same time, rank-and-file committees must link the fight for healthcare to the broader struggles of the working class. Nurses are not alone. workers across New York, educators, transit workers, municipal employees, and others are confronting inflation, job cuts, and the collapse of public services. This year will see major contract battles involving over 300,000 city employees, 80,000 healthcare workers at the League of Voluntary Hospitals, 37,000 transit workers in TWU Local 100, and 40,000 hotel workers in the Hotel and Gaming Trades Council. In contrast to the passivity of the union officials, workers throughout New York and beyond have expressed deep solidarity with the nurses. They understand that this is not just a contract dispute, but a broader struggle for healthcare and the rights of all workers. A genuine victory will require the active unification of these struggles into a mass movement of the working class, acting independently of the union bureaucracy and both big business parties. The aim must be an end to the domination of profit over health. Hospitals must be taken out of the hands of the millionaire CEOs and billionaire trustees and placed under the control of the healthcare providers and the working class as a whole. Healthcare must be a social right, guaranteed to all as part of the socialist transformation of economic life on the basis of social need. The New York nurses' strike reveals the true character of American society, a country ruled by a parasitic oligarchy, but it also reveals the immense power of the working class, whose labour sustains every aspect of society. To win this struggle, nurses must take the initiative into their own hands by building rank-and-file committees, linking up with other sections of workers, and turning the strike into the spearhead of a broader fight against inequality, exploitation, and capitalist dictatorship. Denmark rejects US conquering Greenland as NATO countries send troops. By Andre Damon. Denmark and Greenland rejected US President Donald Trump's demand for the acquisition of Greenland Tuesday, following a meeting at the White House with Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio, even as European NATO members sent troops to the Arctic island. "We have a fundamental disagreement," Danish Foreign Minister Lars Løkke Rasmussen told reporters Tuesday at the Danish embassy in Washington. Rasmussen rejected Trump's wish of conquering Greenland and emphasized this is not in the interest of the kingdom. "The president has made his view clear and we have a different position," he said. "Ideas that would not respect the territorial integrity of the Kingdom of Denmark and the right of self-determination of the Greenlandic people are, of course, totally unacceptable." Speaking at a separate event at the White House Tuesday, Trump reiterated his demands. "We need Greenland for national security," he declared. "If we don't go in, Russia is going to go in, and China is going to go in. And there's not a thing that Denmark can do about it, but we can do everything about it." Asked whether he would rule out the use of military force against a NATO ally, Trump refused. "Certainly I'm not going to give up options," he said. The threats come amid a deployment of European troops to Greenland. Denmark announced military reinforcements, while Germany is deploying 13 Bundeswehr soldiers, Norway 2 military personnel, and Sweden an unspecified number of officers for Operation Arctic Endurance. France is deploying mountain warfare units, and Canada, the Netherlands, and the United Kingdom have confirmed or are considering participation. Greenland is an autonomous territory of Denmark, a founding member of the NATO alliance, and covered by Article 5, which obligates all members to defend any member that is attacked. Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen declared Sunday this is a decisive moment and warned, "If the United States attacks another NATO country, everything stops." Swedish Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson condemned the US's threatening rhetoric Tuesday and confirmed that officers are arriving in Greenland at Denmark's request. The crisis has prompted pointed warnings from European leaders. French President Emmanuel Macron, speaking to ambassadors at the Elysee Palace last week, declared, "Every day people wonder whether Greenland will be invaded, whether Canada will be threatened with becoming the 51st state, or whether Taiwan will be further encircled." Macron accused the US of gradually turning away from some of its allies and breaking free from international rules. German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier warned in a speech January 7th of the breakdown of values by our most important partner, the USA, which helped build this world order. He declared it is about preventing the world from turning into a robber's den, where the most unscrupulous take whatever they want. According to Reuters, Ipsos poll conducted January 12th and the 13th, only 17% of Americans approve of US efforts to acquire Greenland, while 47% disapprove. Just 4% said using military force would be a good idea, with 71% calling it a bad idea, including 60% of Republicans. Polls indicate approximately 85% of Greenlanders oppose joining the United States. Greenland commands the Gjuk Gap, the critical maritime choke point between Greenland, Iceland, and the United Kingdom, through which Russia's Northern Fleet must pass to reach the Atlantic. Climate change is opening Arctic shipping routes that could transform global trade, with the North Sea route 40% shorter than the Suez Canal route between the North Pacific and Northern Europe. Beyond its military value, Greenland contains an estimated 1.5 million tons of proven rare earth reserves, potentially the world's second largest after China, along with vast deposits of copper, graphite, and other critical minerals essential to advanced weapon systems and artificial intelligence infrastructure. Clayton Allen of the political risk consultancy Eurasia Group told CNBC last week, "Trump is a real estate guy. Greenland is sitting on some of the most valuable real estate in terms of economic advantage and strategic defence for the next 3 to 5 decades. The Greenland standoff is one front in a broader eruption of American military violence across the globe. On January 3rd, US forces launched a nighttime assault on Venezuela, killing over 100 people and kidnapping President Nicolas Maduro. The operation involved more than 15,000 troops, the aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford, and waves of drone and missile strikes. Maduro was flown to New York, where he appeared in federal court. The administration announced Tuesday that it has completed an initial $500 million sale of Venezuelan oil, with proceeds held in bank accounts in Qatar and under US control. The administration is simultaneously preparing for military strikes on Iran. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt declared Monday that Trump is unafraid to use the lethal force and might of the United States military against Iran, adding that airstrikes would be one of the many, many options that are on the table. Trump received a military briefing on Iran Tuesday, with the Pentagon presenting strike options, including attacks on Iran's nuclear program and ballistic missile sites. Amid this eruption of militarism, Trump announced plans for a $1.5 trillion defense budget, the largest in history. The Washington Post editorial board published a piece Tuesday titled "Trump's Welcome Push for a $1.5 trillion defense spending," praising the proposal as the right impulse. The Senate voted Wednesday evening to kill a war powers resolution that would have challenged Trump's authority in Venezuela. Vice President Vance cast the tie-breaking vote after two Republican senators, Josh Hawley of Missouri and Todd Young of Indiana, reversed their positions following intense pressure from Trump. The president had reportedly made heated calls to the senators and publicly denounced Republican opponents as stone-cold losers and disasters. The eruption of US military violence across the globe, from the Caribbean to the Arctic, reflects the terminal crisis of American capitalism. Unable to maintain its global position through economic competition, the US ruling class is turning to naked, military force to seize resources and subjugate rivals. Trump has dispensed with even the pretense of legality. "I don't need international law," he told the New York Times last week. Asked what limits exist on his powers, he replied, "My own morality, my own mind. It's the only thing that can stop me." Both parties have endorsed this lawlessness. In December, 115 House Democrats voted for a $901 billion defense authorization bill, the largest in history. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.